This is the Let's Get Real Estate Show with your host, Danielle Chason.
Full-time investor, strategic consultant, motivational coach, sought-after speaker,
and host of your number one real estate investing show, Let's Get Real Estate,
where real people are doing real estate.
Hi, guys. My name is Danelta Hall, and this is the Let's Get Real Estate podcast with Danielle Chason. Today, we talked all things short-term rental, how to get started in the business, how to build your team, how to invest remotely. So happy to be here.
Hey, everybody, it's Danielle Chason here with the Let's Get Real Estate podcast. And today on the show, we got Danelta Hall. Woo, woo. Hey, Danelta, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So excited to have you on because you and I connected. Can you believe it? I think it's been 2 years. Was it a year ago or 2 years ago?
It's been a while. We've been circling, hanging out.
I know. And man, when I first met you, I was like, dang, girl, I need to talk to you more because you know your stuff. So for those of you who are listening, Danelta has really gotten niche in her real estate journey into what she's doing. And she does short-term rentals and mostly short-term vacation rentals. And she's doing them remotely and internationally in 4 different countries, and which is absolutely amazing. And I'll tell you what, you can't do this without systems. So we're going to talk about the whole short-term rental system, how to market, different strategies, how to do it virtually. But before we get into that, I do want to have you, Danelta, introduce yourself to the audience so that they can understand maybe a little bit more about who you are, what your story was when you came into real estate and what led you into real estate and what you're working on now.
Absolutely. So yeah, my name is Danelta Hall. Prior to getting into real estate, I was a corporate consultant for a Fortune 500 company. So I would help different Fortune 500 companies essentially develop their business using big data and data analytics. So systems, processes, and people and scalability has always been something that I've worked on and empowered other businesses to do, and a skill set that I bring into my own business. So you know, real estate has been something that has always made sense to me. I remember when I was like 15, my biggest dream in life was to own a triplex. And that was because I simply kind of understood even at that point that people are always going to need a place to live. My parents, I'm a first generation Canadian. My parents immigrated here from Guyana, and we lived in Parkdale in Toronto until they were able to buy a house in Mississauga. And home ownership was a really big deal. You know, it was just like, you have to own a home. It kind of makes sense. But before that, we rented. And I realized, you know, a lot of people pay rent. And one way that, you know, I could kind of secure a decent living for myself would be to become a landlord and collect rent. So I had the dream of owning a triplex where I could live in one unit and rent out the other two units. And that inspiration really came across to me when I was talking to a friend whose father was an entrepreneur. His father owned multiple businesses that had gone bankrupt. And despite that, they were still able to, you know, have a pretty stable life through real estate. They were purchasing pre-construction properties in the Peel region, Mississauga, Oakville, Milton area, and those properties were appreciating in value. And with that, those real estate investments, they were able to sort of hedge against, you know, some of the challenges of him being an entrepreneur and some of the downturns that happened in their business. So that really sort of made sense to me. And from there, you know, my goal was to get into real estate. I remember one of my first dates with my husband, I think we were like dating a week or two, was to go drive around looking at properties. We were in our 20s. And at that time, it was really hard to find an agent who would take us seriously. So we met an awesome agent who was willing to take us around and show us properties. And we were looking at some really rough, you know, small multifamilies in the Toronto area. But from there, you know, we just kind of knew that we would be buying real estate at some point, and you know, that would be part of our journey. So, you know, we got married and started buying real estate. We were doing what was called house hacking, where we would buy a property, renovate it. I didn't even know about a BRRRR or refinancing. So we were selling the properties and, you know, buying the next property and climbing that property ladder. It actually wasn't until I met Thea Vellanor, who is a wholesaler in the industry, who introduced herself as a real estate investor. And that completely blew my mind. I was like, a real estate investor? What do you mean? A realtor, right? The common question we all get asked. And she's like, no, not a realtor. I invest in real estate. And she introduced me to this concept. And from that, I was all in. I'm like, that's what I need to do. I need to become a real estate investor. And I kind of threw myself into the industry, learned more about it, how to do BRRRR strategies, different strategies, and kind of grew from there.
That's awesome. Yeah. And we share that mutual connection with Thea, because I remember meeting Thea, I think on her, I want to say it was her, it was one of her early deals, maybe her third or fourth deal. And then we ended up working together. I helped her out, and yeah, an amazing one. And she's grown her business as well quite significantly. And I'm just loving how people are coming into the industry and unblocking. And essentially that's what happened for you, right? I mean, you had, I think, and I love that you shared that story, because you said there was a friend of yours who was an entrepreneur, whose dad was an entrepreneur. And I think you have to have that entrepreneurial influence in your life that not many people have. But the beautiful thing about having these networking events that we have is people can come in and get that influence. And now it really opens up your world. But then you and your husband driving around and looking at properties, you got to dream it first, right? You got to dream it first, and then you can elevate that into a reality. So I love that. That's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, so tell us about what you're working on now. So that's how you kind of got into it. That's how you became a property owner. And then you met Thea. And then, well, I think you were doing short-term rentals before you met Thea, right?
Yeah, we had just sort of gotten into the short-term rental space at the time. And that experience essentially came from us, again, trying to, you know, get into the industry. And we were doing a renovation. We had purchased up our, this was the first time we kind of had figured out how to take money out of our existing home, our primary residence, and invest it into real estate. And so we were working on, with at the time, what we considered a flip. However, the flip went over time, over budget, and when it was time to sell it, we couldn't get what we needed in order to cover all of the expenses that we had incurred. So it was time to pivot. We had to change our strategy. And so we decided to do a BRRRR. And that way we were able to refinance the property and we could keep it a little longer until, you know, kind of we hit a market cycle that would make it profitable. But that in itself had its own challenges, because when we refinances, due to the fact that we went over time, we went over budget, we couldn't find a renter who was willing to pay the rents that we needed. We listed it with a few agents, and after about 2 weeks, they were literally like, hey, so we can't find a renter, and, you know, would take it off the market because they didn't want to have this listing sitting there. And that's when we had to come up with something creative. We were looking at, you know, what can we do? How can we cover these bills without coming out of pocket? And there was also some fear there, because we also had an experience where we were renting out our past, the home that we had lived in at the time that we were doing this renovation. And our tenants had completely destroyed the property. They weren't paying their rents. And we were concerned that we had this beautiful, brand new, renovated property that if we potentially rented it out, we wouldn't be able to collect our rents. We would potentially experience property damage. And when it was time to sell, that those tenants may not want to leave. And what we decided to do after an experience staying at an Airbnb that was not great. It was a room in Toronto and they were getting, you know, over $1,000 a month at the time, which was really good money for a really tiny room. They didn't have any hot water. The place was never clean, but they were five-star super hosts. And this experience alone, we looked at each other and we're like, we can do this. We can do Airbnb. Like, if this is a five-star experience, we can definitely top that. We will clean, we will provide toilet paper and hot water to our guests. And that's how it all started. So we decided to take a shot at Airbnb. We already had furniture from a previous property. So we used what we had. We set up the property. We took some photos. We listed it. And at that, it was literally the worst time to start an Airbnb. It was just at the beginning of the pandemic. Travel was shut down. We weren't having those ideal type of clients. And so, you know, we really learned through the, you know, trial by fire on how to kind of screen our guests, how to manage and navigate in this industry. And we were able to turn that into success. In the first year, that property made about 90K in revenue, which was great. It was enough to cover our expenses, and we were also profitable. And from there, we said, you know, this is it. I never looked back, and that's been my main strategy ever since.
That is crazy. Because I'll tell you what, if you don't have hot water, it's not clean, it's not going to be 5-star anymore. Airbnb has definitely evolved a long way, and that's because of people like you who are actually spending time and making it an experience for your clients. And I absolutely love that. Okay, so 90K on that property. I want to talk about two things, about how you actually exited out, because there's two different strategies that you can do in short-term rentals. And I would love for you to share that with the audience, for people that are listening to the podcast. There's two different strategies that you can do for short-term rentals. Obviously when you own them yourself, but you can also arbitrage them, and you're doing both, right? And I'd love for you to explain how you leveraged these two strategies to exit out of your 200K plus a year corporate job. That's not an easy challenge. And so I know a lot of people are out there and they want to learn how to, you know, get out of their job, and you did that. So can we share a little bit about that process?
Absolutely. So the way it kind of started out was because we had relatively, you know, high incomes, we were able to leverage the BRRRR strategy in order to refinance some of our properties and scale to about 6 stores. When we reached about the 5-door point, we were bringing in approximately 10K a month in revenues with short-term rentals. And this was just in and around, you know, Ontario. It got to a point where as interest rates rose, it was challenging, one, to find cash flowing properties. Rents were increasing as well. And it kind of started to erode away the margins on, you know, potential investments. We are investors at heart. We love the concept of owning, getting that appreciation, as well as that cash flow, getting that equity and that leverage. But, you know, the current market conditions made it challenging to continue to do that strategy that I lovingly call the burster, which is essentially, you know, you buy, you renovate, refinance, rent it out as a short-term rental for that additional cash flow upside. And that is what the strategy that originally helped me to leave my job. But the job is what also enabled the strategy, because it enabled us to grow our portfolio. As interest rates rose, we wanted to continue to grow our business and had to come up with another way. And I decided to, you know, try my hand at arbitrage. So arbitrage is the process of renting out a property and subletting it to vacation and business travelers and using that income to pay for the different expenses on the property. This was also a time when I was looking to branch out and expand into new markets. So I've always had a dream of owning vacation homes internationally. As a corporate consultant, I've traveled a lot. I love to travel. I'd be on flights from Monday to Thursday, New York, LA, wherever they needed us to be. And one of the things I enjoyed was actually staying at Airbnbs versus staying at hotels. I like the option of, you know, having the ability to cook a small meal or get some laundry done and, you know, go to a familiar location versus staying at a hotel. I just really enjoyed the comforts of home. So I decided to, you know, just try it out. You ran the numbers. I've been analytical, you know, by trade, having to run large sets of data, and decided to first venture to Ohio. So picked up 5 units in Ohio, really built out a team and some strong connections there that allowed me to go to that location, and also decided to start investing in Mexico. It was really the pinnacle of that, the starting point, was really a mindset shift where it was a matter of just saying yes to the opportunities that came along. Again, it was something new. These were in different countries, places I wasn't familiar with, and wasn't necessarily the easiest thing to do. But in retrospect, the biggest hurdle was the believing I could do it, you know, finding the right people. I'm kind of getting over some of that initial fear of like, people think, you know, I don't want to get scammed. Yeah, I want to meet the right folks. Like, how do I do this? How do I do that? And all of those are absolute valid concerns. And I took all the years of corporate experience that I had building international and remote teams and applied that to my business. Because, you know, a lot of us are coming from places with in our work world where we're actually doing a lot more than we think. We're enabling and empowering our employers to have these huge international businesses. We're working on global teams. We're building these international relationships. And it's just a matter of kind of recognizing your true value, your true worth, what you actually do on a day-to-day, and, you know, applying it to yourself, betting on your own horse. So that's what I did, and was able to grow internationally using the arbitrage method.
Well, I love how you say that. Like, it's a mindset shift. And I think that's the biggest hurdle. And everybody, I get asked a lot, Danalta, about, you know, what is the number one thing that you need to help people with in their businesses? And I know it sounds not sexy, but it's mindset. It's always mindset. Like, we block ourselves. We have these limitations within our own minds that we think we can only go so far. And as soon as you can open your mind and you can go a little bit further with that, then all of a sudden, like, the world is your oyster. Like, it just is amazing what can happen. And that first hurdle is always the hardest one. Like, your first property internationally, the first one in Mexico, I'm sure was the hardest one. And then you realize, wow, okay, like, yeah, I got this. And then your confidence kind of goes through the roof. And then it just, it doesn't stop anymore. Like, now you can go anywhere in the world, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And you're absolutely right about that first property in Mexico. It was not a hit it out the park situation. I failed epically. and it was really interesting. I got connected with the team. I found the property that I really liked, and, you know, somebody else had gotten the property. And so I was already in a place where I was like, okay, well, I said yes to this. I really need to move forward with this. And I kind of, rather than, you know, really thinking out the next property through, took the first one that came along. And it wasn't a great property. There was definitely some challenges. I remember the first guest that came along, we had a 1-star review, and it was really bad. Yeah, they didn't even spend the night. They literally came, they looked at the place, they left, and they gave us a 1-star review. But that was an eye-opener to me, in the sense of, hey, I just made this, you know, investment, and now I need to be accountable for it. It's not enough to just leave it to other people to figure it out for you. I really had to, you know, figure out, like, are these the right people? Did I look at the right team and the skill set? And there are certain things that that I'm currently doing in my business, my processes, my systems that are working for me, that I know I didn't take the time to implement in this new location. And that was a real eye opener for me, in terms of understanding that while it's important I develop teams internationally, that I have to continue to maintain my core values in my business and build the systems and the processes to communicate that to people that are working with me anywhere in the globe, and have the systems and the process to validate that we are doing the checks and balances to make sure that the guests are having a great experience. So yeah, that was a real eye opener for me. At that point, I had to really, relook at, you know, the team that I had there, who was doing what, the processes we had in place, and I had to change everything. And that is when I kind of learned, you know, that consistency is key. And irrespective of my location, I need to have the same checks and balances and the same processes, and really help me build out sort of that remote business process. So yeah, and after we did that, you know, started going really good, and we were able to scale much quicker, with much more success because we had those systems and processes.
I am so glad that you had that realization over needing to manage your people, because one of the biggest frustrations that I have as a coach is that people come in and they have the right mindset where they want to hire people. Like some people, like it's one of two things. People want to hire and do nothing. And then there's other people who, you know, they grind and they don't want to let go of that control. And both of them are on extreme ends of the spectrum, which are very difficult to scale and run a business that way for a number of reasons, different reasons on both ends. But if you can find that middle ground where you hire people, but you're still involved in your business and managing, but at a higher level, then there's some balance that can be found there. But those people that, there's this book out there, which I love. I love this book, Who Not How. And I think that is a great book to help people like me who was on the one end of the spectrum that didn't want to give up control to anybody. That's a great book to open up and start letting go. But some people take it too far to the other end where they're like, they just want to wash their hands and hire people and let them deal with it. But you still need to manage your business. At the end of the day, you still need to run your business, make sure everybody is being held accountable and seeing things through the way you want them to get done. So I'm glad you had that epiphany or that aha moment and realized, no, I can't just, you know, hire somebody and be hands off. And even just locally, hiring a third party property manager. A lot of times landlords are like, oh my God, the property manager didn't do this, they didn't do that. But was there any accountability or communication between the owner and the property manager, right? A lot of times the owners don't manage the managers, and that still needs to be done. Mm-hmm. So I love that you said that. But here's the thing, you kind of skirted around it a little bit. In order to hold people accountable and to manage them, especially remotely in a different continent, literally. Well, actually, I think Mexico is still part of North America. Close enough to a new continent. Anyway, it's at the other end of the continent. You need to really have great systems in place. So let's talk about the systems that you rely on, that you implement, that you use in your business to be able to work remotely, because a lot of businesses now, especially post-pandemic, everything is going remotely. Like, we now are a global community and everything is kind of open as long as we can learn how to implement these systems. So can we talk about that a little bit? Because I think that is a critical piece to the success that you've had.
Absolutely. I think even before the systems, you know, come the people. And one of the challenges I had to kind of overcome and face was finding the right people, finding the people with the mindset and work ethic that they wanted to develop. I don't consider people that work with me employees. I consider them business partners. And my goal is that through our interactions and working together, that they are also developing as individuals and developing their own personal businesses. So, you know, in the Airbnb space, we have cleaners. Cleaners are a core part of our, you know, business. They pretty much are everything. They make sure our places are spotless. And I tend to try to select working partners that have similar objectives as I do. And they want to be able to grow their business and grow in their field, whatever respective part of the industry they're in as well. And I try to create, you know, a mutually symbiotic relationship where they're not only working for me, but they're also learning and developing. And that some of the processes and systems that we use, they can learn from it to help grow and scale their own businesses. So some of those things that we do is to be able to utilize familiar tools. And that may seem really simple, there's a lot of people in the industry. They're like, okay, we're using Slack, we're using this, we're using that. There's a lot of tools out there. But some of the challenges I had faced with trying to implement a lot of the different tools was the familiarity or tech ability of the people that were required to use them. There are all sorts of people. Some are really great at cleaning and not so great with learning a new technology on their smartphone and having a new app that they have to kind of download and figure out. And this is a challenge I face. Like, do I get rid of this awesome person who's doing an amazing job because I'm trying to force them to learn a tool that they're not 100% comfortable with? And maybe they're not performing so well with the tool, but, you know, they're doing their job really great. And so that was a balancing act that I kind of had to figure out. Like, how sophisticated of systems and tools do I want and I need? I would love for everything to be automated, but can the people practically handle it, right? When I'm dealing with like these different languages, different locations, some maybe like young people, other people are like older. And that was something that we kind of had to manage it. And so one of the solutions I had come up with, which was like super basic, is WhatsApp. One of my key communications I use in my business is WhatsApp. And that is because whether they are vacationers, from any platform, whether they're coming from, you know, Mexico or France or Germany or Dominican or the United States, whether they live in Mexico themselves and they're a part of our team, WhatsApp was such a common communication tool that allowed us to kind of circumvent whether people had SMS or even, you know, long distance, trying to communicate internationally. Like, what is the right phone app? What is the right this? And just using things that people already had and were familiar with in order to allow them to be successful. So one of the things I would preface is that, absolutely, we don't have the most robust technical systems and solutions. There are things that we use internally to manage our business, and then there are things we use externally when communicating with other people, and there is some manual components that we bridge. And that's really, though, to give, whether it's our clients or the people that are working with us, the best working experience, and just to really meet people where they're at. WhatsApp was a real game changer for us. It allows us to connect with our guests, irrespective of country. And it's something that most people are familiar with using. So it was a really slight learning curve for them to be able to get on. WhatsApp Business has the capability to create groups, which allows us to organize our different crews by demographic, right? By literally their geographical location. Simple things like putting in nomenclature. So naming conventions that would allow our teams to be able to track who's doing what based on the names of the WhatsApp group chats was key. It, really simple, again, not too sophisticated. We do have our property management systems that we use. We do use them a lot internally. But sometimes, you know, we just need to do things manually. And that is manually within the system without all the automations. Because fact of the matter is, sometimes automations fail. Like, sometimes our messages get stuck. So we still have a daily checklist that says, when I get into the office in the morning, I'm going to review all missed messages. At 12 o'clock, I'm going to check to make sure all of the guests check-in information went out. And there's still that manual check because sometimes the messages get blocked. Sometimes the guest didn't complete one, you know, cell in the automation, which stopped the automation because, you know, it was the wrong character or something like that. And so we have our base fundamentals of our standards and processes, and we use technology to support it. But what I always try to do is just keep consistent in terms of how we do things on a daily basis and make it a repeatable process so that even if the technology fails, the internet is down, the server is down, we can continue business as usual.
I love that. There's lots there to unpack. Yeah. And I will say this, like, I love the biggest thing that is showing up for me in what you're saying right now is that a lot of people look at real estate and they think real estate is their ticket to doing nothing. Their real estate is their ticket to retirement. And it depends on the strategy that you're looking at. But obviously, like, you decided that you wanted to replace your income and you wanted to work for yourself. And there's still a job to do. And I think a lot of people, you know, create these automations or hire people to do the fulfillment of certain tasks, and then they back off, and then they get really upset as to why things aren't going well. That's because you still need to run your business. And if it's coming in, like you said, and just checking, make sure all the messages got answered, addressing any that got missed, make sure that all the automations got completed. Like, there's still a work component. There's a difference between delegation and management. And when you're delegating, you're kind of like, and that's a delegating right now is kind of a hot word. People are all talking about delegating, but you got to be careful because that word delegating sends a message to your brain that I can wash my hands of it. I've given it to somebody else, but you really need to manage your business. And so if you don't have a manager that you've hired to be that middleman between you, if you want to really sit back and do very little, you need to be that manager and hold people accountable and make sure that people are doing what you want them to do. And I love that you highlight that because real estate is not easy. And everybody thinks that they can invest in real estate and then walk away and then retire happy. Well, there's still some work to be done. And that's one of the things that on this show we want to bring to people. This is all about keeping it real. And there's still a job to do, guys. So the WhatsApp groups wanted to mention. Yeah, I love groups. One of my business partners is like, oh, Danielle loves groups. I have different groups in WhatsApp. I also use it. We have on our team, we have 6 VAs now that are all in the Philippines. And so we communicate using WhatsApp all day long. Like it's almost 24/7 really. And, you know, with the team locally and internationally, and it is a game changer for sure. And the other
I wanted to add to your point about delegating. Absolutely. People do get the impression that, okay, once I've delegated, I can wash my hands of it. Even when they're bringing on a manager, they think, okay, now I have a person in place. I think what we need to add to delegate is also develop, irrespective of whether somebody's in an entry-level role or they're a top-tier experienced professional and a manager. Everybody's looking for some growth and fulfillment for the next opportunity, what even within your own business. And so whether, again, it's that entry-level person, it's not enough to just give them the job, but to give them opportunities to learn and grow. And that experienced manager, that stretch opportunity and capability, that's going to be that next thing that they can add to their resume. Because, you know, those people that are going to push your business forward, they're also looking to learn more. And so I feel like that's that key thing. It's that exchange of not only what can you do for me to help my business run day to day, but what knowledge can I impart on you to make you better and help you grow as an individual so that at some point when you're ready to branch out and do something different, you've kind of, you know, built up yourself to that point where maybe you have the confidence to go it on your own, you know, and which is really great, which is something I would love for all my people. But yeah, I think the development aspect is the key because, again, some of the people that we're hiring, and I'm sure, you know, you're dealing with VAs as well too, they're not getting paid the most, but what keeps them around, right? It's that those stretch capabilities, it's that learning. And that was the key thing for me. I think sometimes I was in a place where I'm hiring people. I'm like, oh, well, you're experienced. You've done this before. So you teach me, you tell me what you know, right? And yes, they have great things to contribute. But then, you know, as that owner, as the person running the business, there's also what I've had to learn, and this is a mindset thing too, is maintain that confidence in what I know, what's brought me here, what got me this far. And while there may be other new exciting things, I continue to have value to impart on people, even experienced people of my way of doing that's been able to make me successful, and then is also going to help them grow as well too. So
100%. I love that. Wow. That was a great tangent. You got to go on tangents more often. Love that. develop and delegate. Develop, then delegate. Love that. I am 100% on board with you as far as empowering people. But isn't it like just an old school way of thinking that you don't want to teach your people too much because you're scared that they're going to leave? You put all of this time. And listen, I mean, the reality is this. When you're in business, it's a huge cost to hire somebody and train them. That's a massive mm-hmm. cost. So if somebody comes in and they're only there for 8 months or 12 months, well, you now are taking a massive step back, and there's a cost capital of time and money that you have to reinvest into hiring again and retraining somebody. So there's an old school way of thinking that you don't want to empower them too much because you don't want them to leave. But at the end of the day, that's why I feel the corporate culture is so toxic, because people mm-hmm. are not happy in that space. And so I am 100% okay with empowering my team. And if they decide that they want to move on, I want to allow them to move on and give them that space and wish them well. And the reason why I'm okay with it, being a systems girl like you are, Denalta, that hiring and training process is not as painful for me as it would be for somebody else, because I have my business set on systems. I mean, the foundation of the business is on systems. So plugging in somebody else to come in and learn a position maybe that has been vacated is not that painful for me, because I have onboarding systems, I have training videos and tutorials, and we share all of that with our people. And right now, I said we have 6 VAs. I just hired the 6th one yesterday, and I am out of commission all day, and she's working under me directly. But because of the systems that I have enough to keep her busy, and she can learn what she needs to do, and I don't need to be she doesn't need to be job shadowing me, or I don't have to be telling her every single, 10 minutes, okay, now do this, or now let me show you how to do that, because I have systems for that. So, and we're always trying to make that better every single time. And I'm sure you have the same thing with your cleaners, right? I mean, you have videos. This is the set of expectations. This is what we require of you. This is where we want you to keep your cleaning supplies. This is where you find mm-hmm. the information to unlock the doors. And this is how you use the locking system, right? And so like having all of that just makes it easier. And I really feel if you create a business with the mindset of creating intrapreneurs within the business, I think it's just so much healthier.
100%. And to your point, Danielle, like people are going to leave anyway. And it's a matter of how they're going to choose to do it. If you have an empowered, autonomous leader in your organization, they're going to leave by creating a succession plan and backfilling the person behind them, versus a frustrated employee who hasn't had the opportunity to grow and develop, who's just going to say, today's my last day.
Yep, exactly. And then you have to pick up the pieces, and it's painful. So yeah, when you have a great system, when you have a great relationship with your employees and they do want to move on, like honestly, you support that. You're right. Like I've had people leave, like at a property, a project manager rather left a year and a half ago. And when he left, like I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to like pick up. But he took 2.5 months before he left. And because we had a great relationship. And so that allowed me the time to decide how I wanted to move forward, how I was going to manage the trades, if we were going to replace him, and which we ended up not replacing him. We just wound down our projects. But at the end of the day, it was way easier than if he had just walked off on me. And that's a big, big difference. So creating that intrapreneur, I think, is healthy. You're going to lose some people, but that's okay. Because to your point, Denalta, if they're going to leave now, they're going to leave someday. And so, and you just don't want them. And yeah, if they're unhappy, they're just going to stay there longer than they should. Their performance is going to be down. Their output's going to be down. You're going to be cleaning up messes behind them. They're just going to create a bad culture because they're not happy. So they're going to make other people unhappy. And you're right. Girl, I did not know you were a people person either. So this is something that I could go on for like hours as well. So just for the audience, when I connected with Denalta, like we were talking about systems and I was like, oh my God, that's my language. But yeah, systems and people. I didn't know you were all about people. People are a big deal in your business.
100%. I could not, I could not invest internationally without people. People ask, you know, how do you do it? It's all about the relationships. I have amazing teams, amazingly strong, supportive people that literally help me every step of the way. I have a tax issue. They're like, no problem. I will go down to the local tax office and find out for you. You know, here is what I need, you know? And it's all about people. And yeah, I think if you want to grow any business, it's about building strong relationships and building a strong system and support around you.
Yeah, and take care of your people, right? So you got to do little things. Little things go a long way, like just recognizing their annual, you know, when they've been with you for a year, their annual anniversary with a business, their birthdays. We gave all our VAs a week off at Christmas, paid week. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, that was like gold to them. It was like gold mm-hmm. to them, because other people that are VAs that are working, I mean, they're in a call center. They pop up at Christmas. They're like, yeah, Merry Christmas, everybody, you know, and then pop right back down their cubicles and then right back to work. So we allowed them some downtime to be with their families and recharge. And there's some studies behind that, too. Like, you need to be giving your people time off. And mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, I just want to put it out there. It's, yeah. Amazing. 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 That's why I wanted you on the show. Okay. So we're running over time, but this is such good stuff. Like, one thing I did want to ask though is, with, you mentioned automations, and with the automations that you put into place, because there's some people that might be listening to the podcast right now who want to look into short-term rentals and dive deep and build a successful business. So outside of, you know, outside of building systems and processes and outside of managing your people and becoming a good leader, and people can go out there and get some books on becoming a great leader, they also need to learn about automations. And that is a whole nother monster. And I use them like crazy in my business. But for short-term rentals, though, specifically, what types of automations do you use to help make the process of running your business easier?
Absolutely. So automations are key. I want to preface that it's not just set it and forget it, but some of the key automations that we use are pricing. So we do use dynamic pricing tools that will update our pricing. There is still a manual component that we go in and we check weekly and do some fine tuning. Also automation of messages. So we have and automated messages as soon as a guest books saying, you know, thank you for your message. And we send them a self-check-in link where they can kind of populate their information. We also automatically send them the check-in instructions on the day of their arrival. And we will send them checkout instructions on the day that they're leaving, as well as a follow-up for reviews. We also send, I think, one message at the day after they arrive, just kind of see like how they're doing, but just automating some of the guest communication so that those things happen automatically, connecting of our codes and our keys. So all of that is integrated and happening seamlessly. But as we said earlier, automations are great, but they're not perfect. So just check on them, make sure they're all working all the time.
So what tools do you use to fulfill these automations?
So we use a property management system. I'm currently using Hostaway. That's the one that we are currently using. And some of the tools that we're using for our automations with integrating our system is we have a CRM. I use a Keep CRM in my business. And we use different things. Like one of the things I have, a lot of like verification codes are required to log into some of the different systems. So we use shortcuts to send codes back and forth to the team so that they're able to log in easily without like sharing codes and passwords and those type of things. Zapier to kind of get information from Airbnb or the booking platform about the guest and automatically put it into our CRM. So a number of different things that we're using, as well as something called Notion, which is kind of like I would say Confluence, but basically it's just an online sheet that allows everybody to stay updated. It has a calendar we can put our notes in rather than having multiple Word docs. It's pretty much all of our SOPs, live updates, everything that we have all goes in there. So everything is kind of single source. I'm a big believer in one place to look versus having to open up a lot of documents. So we keep everything in this one Notion file, and it has everything that the customer service team needs to be able to use, do their job, whether it's our SOPs, our FAQs, any sub processes or exceptions that we have.
Yeah, that's crazy because I use Notion too, and not a lot of people use Notion yet, but it's starting to build traction. And we use same thing. We use Notion just to pop all of our documents that we need to share with the team. And anytime the team needs anything, they just go into the Notion page that is related to that specific thing that they're looking for. So yeah, brilliant. Love it. Love it. Wow. Well, this is why you and I connected. Like, we just totally connected when we first met. So yeah, totally love that. Yeah. Wow. Dang it. I don't want to let you go, but we got to go.
I'll come back on. I'll be back another time.
That'd be awesome. For sure. For sure. Well, listen, Denalta, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing all of this great stuff. The last thing that I'm going to ask, just high level, because some people want to get out there and market. And right now for Airbnbs, some people think, or short-term rentals, some people think that, you know, can be a bit of a crowded space. So where do you market? How do you get your units filled? Like, where do you market, and what do you do creatively to get noticed?
Absolutely. So what we do is we make sure that we are on like every platform. So Airbnb, booking.com, VRBO, just make sure that we're on as many platforms as possible. And we are leveraging social media. It's absolutely free to put your property out there. Share with people what we're doing, letting them know about our listings, any promotions that we have, creating an email list so that we can communicate with our guests off of the platforms and get them to book direct. That's a great way, like for any great guests that we've had in the past, we love to connect with them later, offer them discounts and promotions to book again, and you know, kind of have an email campaign that kind of does that. Also just networking, talking to as many people as possible and sharing what we're doing. We are essentially, you know, housing providers in a niche that's outside of your long-term tenant, right? So rather than having to sign a one-year lease, we're catering to people who may not necessarily be able to commit to a one-year lease, whether they're a new immigrant and they don't have that background credit check or job to be able to go the traditional landlord route. Letting people know that we're available and open to providing these safe, comfortable, temporary accommodations to people as they're getting started. What sports teams and hockey leagues, you have, if your kids play sports, you know, they have to travel to these different tournaments and conferences. Airbnb is a great option. So, you know, letting people know, hey, if you need temporary accommodations, I have these properties, here's what we do. And just really, you know, word of mouth communication. Advertising is so key. And I always caution people, do not rely on Airbnb for as the sole way to attract guests to your business, because one, it's super risky, because Airbnb could lock down your account if, you know, something goes wrong. And two, you actually need a book of business to be able to show you have clients and repeat clients to be able to add an evaluation to your furnished rental business. If you don't have a book of clients with like actual names and contact information, you essentially just have a property that's furnished, which doesn't command the same value when you're looking to sell your business at the time of exit. So I think that's really key for people, is really building out that kind of direct booking relationship with people and having those repeat clients. And yes, the people have a lot of concerns about what if there's damage. Always make sure you have insurance. Insurance will cover you in those cases to make sure that you are protected. And, you know, it's a great way to kind of really set your rates and maybe protect against some of the noise that's happening with these different platforms and the different regulations. If, you know, you have your business and, you know, people are coming to you directly, you can choose to negotiate with them how long they stay without any outside intervention. So that just gives you the real autonomy and freedom to run your business how you like.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people miss when they're in the short-term rental space, they miss on the fact that it's easier to sell to existing clients and mm-hmm. being able to, you know, they've been there before, especially if they gave you a 5-star review, they loved it. And we're humans and creatures of habit. We're going to go back and vacation in that same area. I know I've gone back to the same place more than once, right? And so many people have when you get familiar, especially if you have a family, because then it's easier to travel and settle in and all of that. So don't discount having that client, that book of clients, like you said, that client list, because that is the heart of your business. And people also don't realize that when they haven't done business before, your client list, that is what makes your business marketable. So I love that. Denalta Hall, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and dropping some serious bombs for people who really want it, not just about short-term rentals, but just really about running your business as well through systems and personnel and management. Love, love, love. We covered a lot here and just love how open you were. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, guys, this is Danielle Chason, your host of the Let's Get Real Estate podcast, where I bring to you real people doing real estate. Bye for now.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast and congratulations on improving your education real estate.
Please leave a review only if you felt we provided value, as it would really help us if you would leave a 5-star review so that we can help reach a broader audience.
And don't forget to comment what you enjoyed and tell us what you are looking to learn more about.
As always, thanks for your support and we'll see you on the next episode.